Good evening. My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic. My new sobriety date is October 30th of last year. I say new because I had 2.5 years of sobriety and then decided to do some additional research and development, which I don't suggest. I have a home group. It's by the book in Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey, in Monmouth County. I have a sponsor. His name is Anthony J., who has a sponsor. Sean F., who has a sponsor. It goes on infinitum, as you all know. So with the logistics out of the way, so I identify as an alcoholic. Why am I an alcoholic? Well, I've got a lot of circumstances associated with my drinking, but those things don't make me an alcoholic. The fact that I've been to rehab 4 times, the fact that I've been arrested, the fact that I almost got divorced, the fact that Dyfus was involved in my life, the fact that I was fired from a job for drinking, all of those things don't make me an alcoholic. Those are just circumstances associated with my drinking. There are individuals with DUIs, there are individuals in jail, there are individuals that have been divorced, there are individuals that have been fired because of circumstances associated with the use of alcohol from their jobs that are not real alcoholics as defined by the Big Book. I am an alcoholic because I have a threefold disease. I have a threefold disease in that I have a physical allergy to alcohol, and that when I ingest alcohol, I lose the power of choice as to how much I drink or when I stop drinking. You know, people talk about, well, my drug of choice is alcohol, my drug of choice is heroin. Alcohol is my drug of no choice. Okay, I have no choice. When I put any alcohol into my body, what is going to happen next? So that's a physical allergy. Now, the beautiful part about the physical allergy of alcohol, of my disease, is that I never have to engage with that physical allergy again if I am abstinent. If I'm abstinent from alcohol, I will be dry. I won't be sober. I'll be dry for the rest of my life. And I won't engage that physical allergy. But the problem is I have a threefold disease. I don't just have a physical allergy. I have a mental obsession, which is the second part of my disease, which says that I'm going to obsess over what my next drink is going to be, when I'm going to get that next drink, how I'm going to get it, where I'm going to hide it, how I'm going to get away with it, etc., etc., etc. And that mental obsession, thankfully, and by the way, I'm going to refer to the book a lot. I love the book. I believe in the book. And everything that I say up here is just my experience. So, and also, just to preface everything, I will be going over We Agnostics during my three. You guys are very, very lucky in the fact that I'm going to be speaking tonight, and then you get multiple weeks away from me. So I won't be here until this January 7th again. So if I stink, that's awesome. You don't have to deal with me for a while. The book states recovered, right? This is the story of recovered alcoholics. Recovered being past tense. They use past tense for a reason, because we will be relieved of the physical allergy again because we're never going to engage it again. And the mental obsession and the 10-step promises is lifted, right? So I'm not walking around right now because I've been through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I sponsor other men in the program. I am active in the work in all 12 steps. That mental obsession has been relieved. My higher power has relieved me of that mental obsession. I'm no longer walking past bars and going, oh, should I go in, should I not go in, Or maybe if I just get that bottle of vodka and I hide it, just in case I have a bad day or whatever it is, just in case I have a trigger. And by the way, I don't agree with triggers. I don't believe it. And again, all this is just my experience. If you don't agree with anything I say, take it, throw it in the trash. I don't believe in triggers because I'm an alcoholic, and Tuesday morning was a trigger, and Christmas Day was a trigger. And if I was sad, it was a trigger. If I was happy, it was a trigger. You know, if my team won, it was a trigger. If my team lost, it was a trigger. There is no such thing as a trigger. Every day was a holiday for me, okay? I drank because I liked the effect. That's what the book says. I liked the effect. Now, whether that was to run to something, run away from something, whatever it might be, that is my experience with alcohol. and non-conference approved substances. So thankfully, that's been relieved for me. But then there's the third aspect, the spiritual malady. And that's why I chose We Agnostics, because the spiritual malady is the one that we have to do a daily work for. Okay? That's the one where I'm not ever fully recovered, because we're granted a daily reprieve contingent on our spiritual condition. It's not a weekly reprieve or an annual reprieve, or you do the steps once and you get a certificate and they graduate you and you get a cap and gown and then you're off into the woods and you're good to go. I'm granted a daily reprieve based on my work on that day. Okay? I don't get nourishment off the food I ate yesterday. I don't get clean off the shower I took yesterday. I don't get sober off the work I did yesterday. I could have the greatest AA day of my life yesterday. Go to 3 meetings, read with 3 sponsees, read with my sponsor, right? You know, go to a detox shelter, whatever. You can, you know, make a list as long as you want. When I wake up the next day, I start at zero. And for that reason, and it talks about it, and we'll get into it when we get into it. We're going to go through We Agnostics, you know, word by word. And don't worry, I'm not going to break down every word. You know, it talks about the fact that God will do this for you. And I say God. If you have a problem with God, just use higher power. Just insert it yourself. That's a beautiful part of this program, the Big Bang. You know, Abby Thatcher with Bill and Bill's story. You know, conceive a higher power. You know, a God of your own creation. Is that your higher power will do these things for you. God will move mountains, but you got to bring the shovel. Okay? So, you know, the reason that I ended up going out is because I stopped working the tenets of this program and lost conscious contact with my higher power. That's why We Agnostics and the connection with my higher power is the reason, is the chapter I chose for today, because the spiritual remedy and the spiritual experience is so important. It's the foundation of the program, right? We're faced with living an alcoholic death or living a spiritual life. And at the outset, those are not easy choices, especially for the atheist or the agnostic, or for individuals with prejudices against organized religion or spiritual principles. So let's dive in. So we're on page 44, and it starts off saying We Agnostics. Now, I have some beliefs with regard to We Agnostics, because I think that we are all agnostic with regard to some aspect of our life. I am agnostic when it comes to my wife, and I'm agnostic when it comes to certain aspects of self-will applied to other aspects of my life. So I'm in a sling right now because I am agnostic when it comes to weightlifting. Okay? I had experienced some minor pec injuries and decided to self-will and lift through them, and on Wednesday I tore my pec because instead of listening to people and taking it easy, I was like, no, I can do this. Ego, he's got out, he's Mike in. I can do this if I just change this up and I do that exercise instead of this exercise, right? Self-will and self-knowledge avail is nothing. I thought I had enough knowledge about what I was doing in the gym. I could will myself through it. What did I do? I find out tomorrow, but I think I tore the pec off the bone. So, and I'm agnostic when it comes to my wife because, and a lot of people are like this, right? Like, we are the greatest AAers in the world when we're in these rooms, right? Hey, let me help you take out the trash. How are you doing? How was your day? Oh, let me help you with this, blah, blah, blah. When we get home, the wife asks you to take out the trash. Well, why don't you take out the trash? I took out the trash yesterday, right? Tit for tat, this and that. Because we bring in all these preconceived notions. We bring in these ideas of intent and all this stuff. But God either is or he isn't. I can't apply the principles of my spiritual life in certain aspects of my life and say, yeah, God will help me with my recovery in my AA life, AA Mike, but home Mike, or even not even just home Mike, because I apply these principles very well when it comes to my children. I've got a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old. You know, my son has anxiety. I'm the calmest, most patient person in the world when he has anxiety about his homework. My wife has anxiety too, but when she has anxiety, I don't react the same way I do with my son. It's because I'm agnostic in that portion of my life. Now, God either is or he isn't. God is either everything or he is nothing. So, we agnostics doesn't necessarily have to apply to your overall viewpoint of to a higher power or to God. It can apply to how you apply your spiritual outlook to any portion of your life. So in the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. What is that something? Well, we just talked about the threefold disease and whether or not we're an alcoholic. So if you're working with someone new, by the time you get to 44, and if you ever work with someone, they're like, when are we going to get off step one? Right? You know, we've done doctor's opinion. We've done Bill's story. We've done more about alcoholism. We've done there is a solution. Is step two coming, you know, by page 64? Like, when are we going to get there? But it's very important that you establish in that individual that they have learned something of alcoholism with regard to themselves. So I'm not going to go through, you know, the difference between a moderate drinker and a hard drinker and an alcoholic and everything, because by the time we get to page 44, that has been established with the individual that you're working with, or with yourself if you're just working through these steps. We hope we have made a clear-cut distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. And I made that distinction in my own life when I introduced myself. Again, you know, when I'm working with someone, I ask them, why do you think you're an alcoholic? And that person will usually start off with, well, I've got two DWIs. Well, that doesn't make you an alcoholic. Well, you know, my wife said that that doesn't make you an alcoholic. Well, I find that when I start drinking, or I'll have an important appointment in the afternoon, and I'm obsessing about drinking, I start drinking even before that important appointment. Now we're getting somewhere. Okay? So try to drive towards that if you can. And again, these are all just suggestions. I'm not telling anyone how to do anything. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness. And the book, Bill now uses a word which he rarely uses, which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Very rarely does Bill use must or only. The vast majority of this book leaves a lot of wiggle room. Okay? The steps are mere suggestions, right? Even in this chapter, talks about a willingness to believe, not a demand that you have to believe in a higher power. Even though the step itself is came to believe, right? That's the full step. But the introduction of the higher power is willing to believe. Are you willing to have, you know, basically you pray for the willingness. Are you willing to believe? So there's a lot of wide hoops to jump through, but this is an only. So they say that only a spiritual experience will conquer. And again, that's, you know, a lot of times you'll hear people talk about, you know, don't drink and go to meetings. Just don't drink, no matter what, all that kind of stuff. You know, if that was the case, if that was the real solution, and the real solution wasn't a spiritual experience, this book would be one page long. Be don't drink and go to meetings. It also talks about in this book and other sections that a spiritual experience will solve all our problems, not just the drink problem. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue on as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. So What is an atheist? An atheist denies there is a God. An agnostic does not rely on or know there is a God that will work in their life or my life, if I'm applying this to myself. And again, that can be applied to various aspects of your life, not necessarily your overall viewpoint. So basically saying, you're in trouble. You're doomed. That's, you know, to continue on as you are means disaster. And all the data points in all of our attendant lives, no one comes in here on a winning streak. No one's like rolling up after dropping the kids off at soccer practice in a Maserati, heading back to their spouse who's making, you know, a brisket on their first AA meeting, being like, you know, I'm just going to go check it out. We all have data points that point to the fact that we're in AA for the right reason, that we need to be here to save our lives. So to be doomed to an alcoholic death or live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. So that gives us two alternatives. It means we're at a fork in the road. We got two ways to go. Die an alcoholic death, which is long, lonely, and painful, or live a spiritual life. And you know you're a true alcoholic if you're looking at, like, you know, pictures of a liver with cirrhosis and you're going, oh, okay, but tell me more about this. When does this actually happen? Are we talking 20 years? Are we talking 30 years? Like, is it going to be painful? Am I going to be in the hospital for a long time? Because this spiritual life, I mean, that's like work, and I got to believe in a God, and I got to pray and get on my knees, and I got to sponsor people. That sounds like a lot of work. But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were exactly of that type. And if you're faced with an atheist or an agnostic from a sponsorship perspective, you know, taking them through the book as it's written, that's the beautiful part about sponsorship is, you know, a lot of people have a lot of trepidation about sponsoring people, but all you have to do is be able to read this book. The book does the work for you. Okay, you transmit your experience, strength, and knowledge to that individual. You read the book. That's all you have to do. I had an individual, he's a current sponsee of mine, who is an atheist. When he first came to me, he was wearing a very pronounced crucifix on his neck. I'm like, oh, this is going to be easy, right? I didn't know he was an atheist yet. I said, he's got the God thing already. Like, we're already, you know, batting 500, getting to 1,000 is not going to be a problem. And it turned out that his grandfather had passed, and that had been his grandfather's necklace, and that he was actually an atheist. He just wore it to honor his grandfather. And I said, okay, this is a tougher hill to climb than I anticipated. Now, this gentleman celebrated 90 days 2 months ago. And not that this is a barometer for anyone's success in the program. This is just showing his openness and willingness to see a higher power in his own life. But he's attending church for the first time on Christmas Eve, you know, in a week. Practice of religious principles or practicing a religion is not a requirement of this program whatsoever. It's completely religious agnostic. But it just shows, you know, when you take a look at, excuse me, turning pages is a little challenging for me. But when you take a look at the spiritual experience in the appendices, there is three things that are required to begin your journey on 568. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, right? So, regardless of what we think of organized religion, this gentleman's willingness, his honesty, and most importantly, his open-mindedness to what his higher power could be and his journey towards that is shown through the fact that he's going to church and exploring that option. So that's been his journey. And that's starting as an atheist who said, I can prove that there is no God, to going through this program. I had nothing to do with it. It's everything that he's done through his higher power. just going through this book. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. That's why it's so important to establish the fact that the individual is an alcoholic at first blush, right? That's why it takes 43 pages to get to step two, to ensure that they understand that they are powerless over alcohol, or that as we go through the steps, that we are powerless over alcohol. And we have to have, and again, I say this as suggestions in my experience, I have to have a constant contact with all of these steps. Now, a lot of that happens with sponsorship. It's very helpful to have a constant contact with step two by having someone who was an atheist end up going to church, right? That's helpful. But, and I'll talk a little bit more about it as we get a little bit further. My idea of God that I built when I first took step two, or my higher power, it doesn't, you know, again, whatever you're comfortable with, insert. It's dynamic. It changes. Nothing has to be constant about my higher power. It's of my own making. You know, my program can't be static, and neither can my higher power, at least in my opinion. But after a while, we have to face the fact we must find a spiritual basis of life, or else. What's the or else? An alcoholic death. Perhaps it's going to be that way with you, but cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. All right, better philosophy of life. What does that mean? That could mean anything. That could mean what it really boils down to, again, is self-knowledge and self-will applied to this problem. All right, so better philosophy of life for me, things that I had tried previously before actually getting into the program, was I'm going to go to church every day. So I got fired from a job. I had a lot of time on my hands. So I said, I'm going to go to church every day at 9 o'clock. Okay? I wasn't working the steps. And, you know, the 12 and 12 talks about the man who is devout in his religious practices, but is still reeking of booze, right? That was me. Okay? Following all the principles of my religious practices, but still reeking of booze. Why? Because what does the 12 and 12 say? It's not about the quantity of your spirituality. It's about the quality. Okay, I actually had no conscious contact with God. I thought the fact that I was showing up in God's house would be enough. What else have I tried from a philosophy of life? Well, if I get really healthy, that will help me. You know, if I got really into endurance racing, if you could believe that. I'm not a svelte man. I got really into endurance races. I've tried to literally run away from my alcoholism. In 1 year, I ran 13 half marathons, 2 marathons, a triathlon, and a half Ironman. And I was literally trying to run away from my problem and eat right and do this and that and that. A week before I ran the half Ironman, I went on a week-long bender in Paris, France. I went there for business, and this is like the typical, you know, man has important appointment, man doesn't keep important appointment because he has an alcoholic and drinks before important appointment, right? I went to fly there for business. They flew me first class. I thought, I'll have one martini. That's it. But physical allergy kicks in, mental obsession kicks in. I didn't make a single meeting. I didn't make a single presentation. I was supposed to be there for 7 days. I was there for 7 days. I just never left the hotel. I drank to pass out. I flew home. That's what got me fired. So, none of these better philosophies of life are sufficient to overcome alcoholism. Otherwise, we would have recovered long ago. All of us have some story about a better philosophy of life we tried to apply before we came into the rooms, right? Before we tried to apply spiritual principles to this problem. A philosophy of life is just an overall vision or attitude toward life and the purpose of life, okay? So I've had other ones too. When I have my first kid, that will change my philosophy of life. My priorities will change, right? We could make this list ad infinitum, but we've all had some philosophy of life that we thought would change our perspective and change our drinking. The important thing that I like to outline here is this better philosophy of life to a sponsee. Do you think that this book is a better philosophy of life? Do you think that you're going to learn a code of morals from this book? Or do you think this book is going to give you access to power in order to overcome alcoholism? Because that's the point of the book, is to access power. Because we just admitted we're powerless. So at the end of step one, you have no power. You have access to no power. So you have to access some power, and it's clear, and we're going to read it in a moment, that it's clear, it's obvious that that power has to be greater than ourselves, because we've tried better philosophies of life, which are self-will and self-knowledge, which are coming from us. It has to be a power greater than ourselves. We found such codes and philosophies did not save us no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. That's the power we just talked about. Our human resources then marshaled by the will, the self-will we just talked about, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. So you can ask yourself the question, when I gathered all my resources, best I could, did I fail completely? Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how are we to find this power? Now, the book outlines exactly where to find the power on 55, but we'll get there. Well, it's exactly what this book is about. The main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. And that problem is your unmanageability. Now, the unmanageability that we point out in the program is our life has become unmanageable. Step one doesn't say my drinking. It says I'm powerless over alcohol. And then it's a separate thought that my life is unmanageable. Because again, the book promises that spiritual experience will solve all our problems. Okay? So when it says we'll solve your problem, it's talking about your unmanageability. And the unmanageability applies to your entire life. It's not just your drinking. So a spiritual experience will solve all of your problems, not just your drinking problem. You know, people say, I came from my drinking, saved from my thinking, right? Well, that is one of the ones that actually is true. And by the way, you know, people get caught up on the spiritual experience. When you're faced with an atheist or an agnostic, and you talk about living a spiritual experience or living on a spiritual basis, the appendix on spiritual experience describes the spiritual experience as a personality change. Okay, so if someone is caught up on that to begin with, just insert personality change. And I found that people can align to that a lot quicker. That's all it is. You know, if you used to, when you're at ShopRite and there's garbage on the ground next to, you know, somebody missed throwing the garbage away in the trash, and you used to walk by it, now you walk by and you pick it up and you throw it out, well, that's evidence of a personality change. You take that extra cart you ended up putting in the cart thing because somebody didn't do it, it's personality change. You end up treating somebody with some patience and some humanity, personality. Those are all just evidences of a personality change, which is just another word for spiritual experience. So if somebody's bumping up against spiritual experience, like bumping up against God, personality change, higher power. A little bit more digestible. That means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we are going to talk about God. Here, difficulty arises with agnostics. Not just agnostics, atheists, or individuals with preconceived notions about God. Right? People who grew up in, and I am Catholic, so I'm just going to say, the Catholic Church, right? They say, this is the God of my parents, and this is my preconceived notion of God or higher power, whatever it might be, and I'm combating that, right? So it's not just agnostics. It could be anybody has difficulty arising here. Many times you talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problems and explain our fellowship. The 12 and 12 talks about having us over a barrel when they acknowledge that they're an alcoholic, and then switch over to the fact that, by the way, now that you're over the barrel, the only thing that'll save you is a spiritual experience. And they say, oh, now you really got me. But his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God, for we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. We know how he feels. We've shared his honest doubt and prejudice. So prejudice comes up a lot. And prejudice is defined as a preconceived opinion that is not based on reason or actual experience. Okay? And that flies directly in the face of the willingness and the open-mindedness that is talked about in the second appendix. Some of us have been violently anti-religious. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him with which someone had tried to impress upon them during a childhood, like my Catholic Church example. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate or wrong or whatever it might be. With that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We were bothered with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power beyond ourselves was somewhat weak, even cowardly. I think we've all been there. We looked upon this world of warring individuals, warring theological systems, and inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. So 12 and 12 talks about how, you know, the ugliness of some of the trees ruins the forest. We looked askance at many individuals who claimed to be godly. How could a supreme being have anything to do with it all, and who could comprehend a supreme being anyhow? Yet in other moments we found ourselves thinking, when enchanted by a starlit night, who then made all of this? There was a feeling of awe and wonder, but it was fleeting and soon lost. That's kind of hearkening back to when Bill was at Winchester Cathedral and he saw the tombstone, right? He says, in Bill's story, I knew at that moment that God was with me at that moment, but it was soon, he soon lost it due to calamity and pomp and circumstance and all that other stuff. So in 55, eventually we'll get to it, but says God is deep down within all of us. So when you're looking out at the starlit night, the atheist or the agnostic or the individual who previously had faith but lost it, says who then made all of this, that's, you know, their higher power being with them for a moment, but then it's soon lost. Yes, we of agnostic temperament have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice, there it is again, and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God. So two thoughts there. Willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, even a willingness. So again, we already talked about the broadness of that. I found that, you know, and it talks about faith, but faith doesn't come immediately, right? It comes, you come to believe, then comes action, then comes faith. So you become willing to believe in a power greater than yourself. The action is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and then you get faith out of that because you see the results of the actions that you've taken contingent upon the belief in the higher power. And that's kind of how it works with anything, right? You start working with a new manager. You believe that they have your best intentions. You start working with them. That's the action. You find that they do have your best intentions in mind, and then you have faith that they do, in fact, have their best intentions. Because there's a difference between belief and faith. Faith is blind devotion. So belief, action, faith, that's kind of how it builds. And the beautiful part is here, it says, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God, it doesn't say you will eventually be able to fully define or comprehend that power. Right? I don't have to figure God out. I don't have to figure out God at the beginning of step 2, in the middle of step 2, at the end of step 2, at the end of step 12, I don't have to understand God. I never will understand my God fully. Okay? Maybe I'll get a nugget here, a nugget there. But, and again, this is, you know, my higher power, but I'm a finite being attempting to understand an omnipotent spiritual entity. That's impossible, in my estimation. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. So, I can't have your God, and you can't have my God. Right? It's your God. Everyone's got their own conception of a higher power. Our own conception, and the beautiful part of that is, like I said before, it can change. So, my higher power has brought me from the depths of alcoholism, has brought me many, the promises have all come true in here, okay? But how much farther can my higher power take me? Like, I'm sitting here, but I could be sitting here in a week, or a month, or a year. And then when I'm sitting here in a year, how much further can he take me again? I use he very rashly, I'm sorry. It could be anything. How much farther can God take me? Always further. There's no limit to my higher power, how far I can go from a spiritual perspective, right? There's no ceiling on my spiritual experience. So much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, the spirit of the universe, and again, these are great words to use if someone bristles against higher power or God, creative intelligence, spirit of the universe, whatever it might be, underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. So before, I talked about, you know, how easy it would be to write this book if don't drink and go to meetings was enough for us to not be alcoholic, right? It would just say, don't drink, go to meetings. Wonderful pamphlet. Thanks for coming out. And that'd be it. But this could also be a very short book and say, God will relieve you of your alcoholism. That would be nice too, right? Belief in God. God, say a couple prayers, relieve me of my alcoholism. I don't know about you or anyone else in this room. I've said a million foxhole prayers of that same ilk. None of them worked. Why? Because I didn't take other simple steps. The action on my part wasn't there. And that's what I was talking about before. Like when I talked about the reason that I relapsed is I had gone through all the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, but then I stopped doing that daily work. I became enamored with my AA biography. Okay? People talk about, why'd you go out? Oh, I stopped going to meetings. That's not my story. I was chairing my home group. I had three sponsees. I was going down to the mission in Asbury Park. I was doing speaking commitments. Okay? But I was doing everything in, what I like to say is like an academic sense. Yes, this is a textbook, but I was teaching it like it was a chemistry textbook, okay? I was bringing no spiritual fortitude forward whatsoever. I was just regurgitating on speaking commitments, old, you know, things that I had said before, things that I think that you might want to hear. And I had no conscious contact with my higher power. In fact, towards the end, even before I relapsed, I began to question who my higher power was. How can you have any spiritual experience if you don't have a foundation? This is the cornerstone. It talks about the cornerstone on 47. This is the cornerstone of our spiritual experience. Our spiritual structure can be built on this simple cornerstone. What is a simple cornerstone? A belief in a higher power. You can't, if you're questioning what your higher power is, where is that belief? So my entire structure, my entire spiritual structure was crumbling about me. Okay? And I wasn't doing all the 12 steps. I wasn't doing a nightly inventory. I wasn't praying. I wasn't meditating. How can you have a conscience? Of course I was questioning what my higher power was, because I wasn't talking to or listening to my higher power. So again, as I had, I'll reiterate again about before about, you know, it's a daily work. We got to put in, I have to put in daily work to ensure my sobriety, my recovery. We found that God does not make too hard terms for those who seek Him. God doesn't make too hard terms, but I do. I make too hard terms for Him. Okay? So I will say, I don't need to do a nightly inventory. It's 11:30. I just got home. The kids were going crazy, and I needed showers and a late dinner, and I'm tired. And, you know, I can always make excuses. That's me making hard terms. That's not God making hard terms on me. That's me making hard terms for Him to be able to access me. To us, the realm of the Spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. When, therefore, we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God, which we've already spoken about. This applies, too, to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice, there it is again, you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to effect our first conscious relation with God as we understood Him. Afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach, like my sponsee attempting to go into church when he was an atheist. That was growth, but if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was. Again, small beginnings. Simple as I've been willing to believe. In the past, I believed in money or things or people. Think about love. If you've loved someone, that's not a tangible thing. But if you believed in that, you can believe in this. We need to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? And we're at... I got a little bit of time. My watch is completely off. My watch says it's 1:30. So... Note to self, check the watch. Step two is a two-part step, okay? It's came to believe in a power greater than ourselves. That's the first part. The second part could restore us to sanity. So right now, we're just concentrating on the first part. The could restore us to sanity, the sanity aspect should be established. I tried to establish in step one, because the powerlessness over alcohol, I tried to introduce the sanity aspect of things too. The most insane thing that we do, and I tell the guys, they're like, I'm not insane. Like, I'm not talking about you running around in bed sheets, you know, barking like a dog in the street. The most insane thing that we do is that we have all these data points, you know, all these attendant circumstances about what happens when we drink. And again, I'm not talking about, the legal implications or the marital implications. I'm talking about the when you drank when you didn't want to. How many times did that happen? Or when you said I was going to have 3 and you had 16. Those times, you've got all those data points, and you say completely sober, because we do, the first drink is always sober. This time will be different, right? The book talks about, and it does a great job setting it, takes 43 pages, and the doctor's opinion, which doesn't even count towards the 43, about setting that up with regard to, you know, those memories don't even come to fruition. We're without a mental defense against them. You know, when people tell you to, just think it through. You're using a sick brain to fix a disease. that comes from that same sick brain. So it's impossible to do that. Eventually, it will falter. So whenever I finish this chapter, I ask, it's a twofold question. It's, do you believe that there is do you have a belief in a higher power? Yes. Okay. Do you believe that that higher power can restore you to sanity? Yes. Okay. Now we're done with step two. As a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. So what's a cornerstone? A willingness to believe. The willingness brings us to that first half of step two, about whether or not you are willing to believe that there's a power greater than yourself. And for a constant contact with step two, I ask myself, not on a daily basis, but I ask myself when I'm reevaluating my program through the bedevilments, which are on 52, which we'll get to in future weeks, am I willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself that can take me beyond where I am at? All right, with my program, with my relationships, with my own spiritual experience, with my relationship with my higher power. That was great news for us, for we had assumed we could not make use of spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith which seemed difficult to believe. When people presented us with spiritual approaches, how frequently did we all say, I wish I had what that man has. I'm sure it would work if I could only believe as he believes. But again, you don't have to believe as anyone else believes. You believe as you believe. It's your construction of a higher power. But I cannot accept as surely true the many articles of faith which are so plain to him. You don't have to. So I was comforted to learn that we could commence at a much simpler level. So are you believing that there's a process here that could take you from a simple willingness to believe to faith? So there's the willingness to believe. We talked about the action. The action is the process that will take you from a simple willingness to believe to that faith. I'll stop there. I wanted to stop at 47 for today. Is that all right, Mark?
Sure.
Cool.